Hello and welcome to Unlimited Realities. I'm your host, Lisa Zimmer, and I am just absolutely thrilled to be here with you today because I am loving the subject matter of today. I have renowned filmmaker Paul Davids here with us today, and he just launched a fascinating, groundbreaking documentary called Life After Death Project. And if you know me, and I get on my soapbox every once in a while, the two fascinating subjects for me are neuroscience and the afterlife. And so I am absolutely thrilled to be able to bring this to you today. We are offering, Paul is, I just spoke to him and he's calling through with another number. So he wants to get on a landline. And so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to talk about Paul till he comes on, because this is such an exciting subject matter for me. Now, Paul Davids is quite renowned and has worked with, among many, documentary film ideas. And one of his very dear friends and mentors was Forrest J. Ackerman, who, if you recall, if you're a sci-fi buff, you will understand that Ackerman actually was one of the pioneering sci-fi filmmakers of our time. He, in fact, coined the phrase sci-fi. Fascinating man, a bit quirky, but you know I do like quirk. So this was just a really, really wonderful documentary. I urge all of you to go to www.lifeafterdeathproject.com to get a copy of this documentary. It is fascinating. And we have on here fascinating authors. Dr. Gary Schwartz, who is a professor studying in Arizona the body-mind-spirit connection, the afterlife experiments, the sacred promise of that we do have an afterlife that is here in our existence. We also have Danian Brinkley, who comes on, and we have Michael Shermer, who is the skeptic on the documentary, who also disputes a lot of some of the phenomenon. But as you watch this documentary, skepticism is not something you really tap into on this. So without further ado, Paul, are you there on
I am. Good to talk to you this morning, Lisa.
Thank you so much for being my guest. I'm thrilled to introduce you to the audience today. Audience, without further ado, let me introduce to you renowned filmmaker Paul Davids, who has launched his fascinating, groundbreaking film on life after death in his Life After Death Project. Welcome, Paul. I'm thrilled to have you today.
Well, thank you very, very much. It's an exciting time for me because the movie was shown on the Sci-Fi Channel in May one time. Nationally, the DVD just came out 2 days ago. And actually, it's two DVDs because I've created a sequel for the Life After Death Project, too. And so now online, whether it's Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Target or Walmart, you know, wherever you go, you can find the Life After Death Project now. And at Amazon, it seems to have shot right up very quickly. There seems to be a lot of interest in it. So I spent 4 years on this project. It was a labor of love and a labor of truth.
Oh, it was amazing. And I'm going to go to Amazon and write a review for you. But let's talk a little bit about what inspired this, because it starts off with your inspiration was by your friend and mentor, Forrest J. Ackerman, who,
that's right, Forry
Ackerman is the pioneer of sci-fi films and coining the phrase, actually, sci-fi. He was an atheist. So when he passed in 2008, he jokingly told a few close friends, if he was wrong about the afterlife, he'd come pop in and drop a visit and drop a line. Well, after his death in 2008, in fact, those things started to happen. And here we are with this wonderful documentary that chronicles the individuals as well as scientists, doctors, researchers, psychics, lay people. And I love Danian Brinkley. How can you not love that gentle, loving soul?
Oh, it's wonderful that all these people participated. And, you know, I want to say right up front that when people hear, you know, the topic, which has to do with,
yes,
after-death communication, and it reminds them of mediums and seances, and which was sort of the forerunner of this, you know, starting a century ago or so, They want to have a knee-jerk reaction saying, you know, sounds tabloid. You know,
right.
It sounds like exploitation.
Right.
But in fact, there's no exploitation in the film. The film is true. Everything in it is honest. People want to say, well, is it a hoax? We've been through the Blair Witch Project. And the answer is no, it's not a hoax. It's not done for deception. It was done for the benefit of mankind and science, because
right.
when strange phenomena started to happen that I could peg related to the late Fari Ackerman, I got scientists involved. I went to Indiana University, the College of New Jersey, to talk to top forensic chemists to analyze evidence left behind in what seemed to be, you know, contacts, unexplained things that happened. In one case, a text that was altered when I was alone in the house, out of the room briefly, and I had seen the document. I knew it was normal. There was no question in my mind that I was alone. And immediately, when I got back into the bedroom where I had placed the document, I could see that there were four words blocked out. And the ink, or whatever substance it was that was doing this, was still moist. So it had just happened. And it was precise. It was exact. It was targeted. It was those four words clearly selected. So, you know, the knee-jerk reaction from, you know, skeptics is they say, well, look, did you check your ceiling? Was any water dripping? You know, did you have a leaky pen in your bed? It completely obscures the fact that this was precisely done. And it was the first thing the scientists noticed who looked at it, that those words were chosen. It was targeted. There was no one physically present who could have done it. And it was very soon after the great tribute for Fari Ackerman at the Egyptian Theater in Hollywood. Let me digress a moment, if I will, and pop in
sure.
for a question if you want to interrupt. But
sure.
I'd like your audience to know a little bit more about Fari Ackerman and why he's important and
yes.
why I got involved, why it was so meaningful to me. Because
okay.
you described Fari as a filmmaker. Although he was in quite a number of films in cameo roles, he was not really a filmmaker. He was an editor of the most popular magazine about science fiction, fantasy, horror, and monster movies. It started in 1958, that magazine, Famous Monsters of Filmland. Actually, Fari was born in 1916, so you're talking about a man who grew up in the era of the silent movies and saw the whole development of cinema and gravitated toward all of the films that had special effects, science fiction, horror, futurism, future vision of mankind. This is what he focused on. And he was a massive contributor in that field. And everyone who ever became a professional in that field, at one point or another, surely came into contact with Forrest J. Ackerman and his writings and his publications. He was like a Pied Piper for George Lucas and Steven Spielberg and Guillermo del Toro and Peter Jackson and John Landis, Dennis Muir and Rick Baker. I mean, the list, it includes everyone working in the field today. They all knew him. I met him when I was a kid. I was, I think, 13 years old when I met him at a science fiction convention in Washington. And I was a kid making amateur movies, stop motion, special effects, dragons, dinosaurs. I loved that kind of stuff from reading Famous Monsters. And the magazine was fun, and it was funny, and he had a great sense of humor. And so kids particularly, you know, loved him and his magazine. I turned out to be one of the winners in his amateur film contest then, way before video. This was the days of 8mm film.
Okay.
And I went on to college. I went to Princeton University. I studied psychology. But I always really wanted to work in film. And I applied to the American Film Institute, Center for Advanced Film Studies. It was the opening year of that institution in Beverly Hills. I was one of only 15 people accepted and was surrounded by the greats of Hollywood, many of whom are no longer with us. And that was how I found my way into the business. You know, I was a fellow student with people like David Lynch and Terrence Malick. You may not know Caleb Deschanel, you know, Zoe Deschanel, you know,
okay.
Her father is one of the great cinematographers. He was a student there. And while there, I got to know Fari so well. He lived in an 18-room house in the Las Feliz area of Los Angeles, and his house was like a museum. Every room, every corner, every wall, packed with memorabilia from science fiction films. He had the original props, the monsters, Lon Chaney's makeup kit, masks galore, every poster you can imagine, all filed neatly, lobby cards, paintings. It was the only museum of its kind for decades. And so I would visit Fari. I wrote for him. He wrote a foreword for my first book. We were friends through the decades. And
you
mentioned the fact he was a skeptic. He was an atheist. And he dismissed the possibility of life after death, but jokingly said, Paul, I'll drop you a line if it turns out that I wake up to some big science fiction convention in the sky. He said, but I doubt it, and don't count on it. And he said, besides, if that does happen, I'll be very busy having reunions with the great horror actors like Boris Karloff and Peter Lorre, and my dear friend Bela Lugosi. He wore Bela Lugosi's Dracula cape and his Dracula ring.
Wow.
And when you knocked on Fari's door to visit, a voice would come through his loudspeaker that would say, "Who dares disturb the sleep of the vampire?" And then he'd let you in. You know, he was a showman.
Right.
And the show, the biggest show of Fari's life, I think, started the day of his tribute. Because even that day, there were two filmmakers from Canada who'd made a film about him, and they visited his crypt before the tribute. And they knocked on his crypt and said, "Hello, Uncle Fari." You know, in a playful mood, Fari was that kind of guy. You could do that. They wouldn't have done it with anybody else. And they swore that within an hour of that, they heard back from him. And he's deceased. And they explained how they heard back from him. It started with a CAPTCHA code on a computer. You want to blog onto Facebook, you want to post. A CAPTCHA code comes up. They want to know you're not a spammer, so you've got to spell out the letters and the numbers that have the squiggles. We've all done this, right?
Right.
So the CAPTCHA code was his name. It was Ackerman, 000. And if you just compute the odds of that happening by random chance, the other computer contributed to the mystery because one of the filmmakers said, you know, is he really dead? The other computer blurted out with a voice, a childlike voice that you can find on YouTube. It's an emoticon, and it says, "Oh, my gosh, no way." The thing is, the computer was asleep. It wasn't logged onto YouTube. This didn't exist in the hard drive of the computer. So as Ian Johnston of Toronto said, he said, "Look, I'm a skeptic, but my computer had no business talking to me then."
Right.
It made that comment just after we saw his name. And imagine me, I'm a speaker, one of the many speakers at the tribute, in great company, because Ray Bradbury is speaking there, great friend of Fari, and Guillermo del Toro is there, and Peter Jackson checks in from New Zealand by video, et cetera, et cetera. So for me, it's a week later when this ink blot happens. And so right, the timing was perfect for me to be receiving a message, and I didn't figure out what it meant immediately, but it did become crystal clear as I remembered Fari's love of puns and wordplay and word games and twists of words. He liked to find words within words and names within names. And in what he had blacked out, right in the middle of one of the words, was the name of the man who had been his caregiver for the last 10 years of his life. And he was telling me he spoke to this man.
Joe Mo.
When I contacted Joe Mo, I hadn't figured out the meaning of the ink blot yet. And I was calling Joe to ask if he had old manuscripts of Fari so I could see how he blacked out words, how he crossed them out when he was editing. But Joe didn't even let me ask the question before he began telling me about this experience he, as a skeptic, had of having a virtual apparition of Fari coming to him. And he said it was, he says, moments before he woke up, but it wasn't like a dream. It was super real, and it was in his room he was seeing, and Fari was in his room. And Fari spoke to him and thanked him for the tribute in his own humorous, sly, mischievous sort of way. And then Joe opens his eyes, and everything he's seeing was exactly the same, but no more Fari there. So he said, "Paul, you know, was this real? It's like Fari came and spoke to me." And what's crossed out on my document is "spoke to Joe Mo." Okay? When you take the name that's within the name, because the name was Modi there, but that's exactly what Fari would do. I found 15 other examples where he did that with somebody's name inside a name. It was his trademark, you see. It was done in a way he, you know, I feel,
right,
this is my conclusion, he expected me to know it.
Right.
And this wasn't the end of the contacts. This was the beginning of very strange things that have continued for 4 years.
Wow.
4 years, and many of them tied directly to. So for the skeptics who don't believe there's any survival of personality after death,
right?
This case is a big challenge to them, and intended to be a big challenge to their point of view, because even Michael Shermer, probably the most famous skeptic in the U.S., as you mentioned, editor
right.
of Skeptic Magazine, author of books like The Believing Brain and Why People Believe Weird Things. You know, he's always looking for the, you want to know why people believe weird things? We got weird people, right?
Right.
Okay?
Right.
That doesn't work for me. That doesn't
right.
work for me. And he says, you know, it's always the believer who already believes that he'll see a sign. And he's the one who's jumping to the conclusion of turning into something into a sign. You've got somebody who's a devoutly faithful in God, and he looks up at the sky and he sees clouds that look like an angel. That's the guy that'll think, oh, you know, God is sending me an angel, when it's
right.
water vapor in clouds, as any meteorologist
right.
would tell you. So that's Michael Shermer's objection. And what I say back to him is, look, so many of the people in my film, The Life After Death Project, were not believers in this. Something happened to them that caused them to come to these conclusions. They weren't looking for it. I wasn't
right.
looking for it. I wasn't expecting it. I've got many people in the film who are just absolutely taken by surprise in a life-changing way
right.
By contact from someone deceased who they knew. So, Lisa, I'm tired of science and skeptics throwing out this evidence, ignoring
right.
it, debunking it. You know,
I
James Randi says he'll give $1 million to anybody who
right.
can prove the paranormal. James Randi, I hope you're listening. You owe me $1 million.
Right.
You know,
right.
see the Life After Death Project, everyone. Please, you have to see
so
it
phenomenal.
To understand. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's one of these things, you know, there's so many, as you were saying, there's so many who dispute the afterlife, and this film begs to challenge that thought. But at the same point, we have so many people who have experienced so many things. And, you know, Danian Brinkley was a real validator for me because I experienced
yeah.
a near-death experience. And at that
you
time,
did.
After going through it, I became much more intuitive after it. So for me, he is a real emotional resonance for me. And his authenticity across the board is so genuine, so from the
yeah.
soul, from the heart. You know, you can't look at him and say, what a BSer. You know,
Let me tell you about him a little bit, you know, because he's in the film. And I want to just say first, Lisa, there's many ways you can study life after death. And the
right.
NDE, the near-death experience, is one of them, which you're talking about now. The electronic phenomena, EVP, electronic voice phenomena.
I am very interested in that. Yes.
And
ITC,
instrumental transcommunication, reincarnation, apparitions, manifestations, apportations. The field is vast for study, But with the near-death experience and Danian, he wrote Saved by the Light, which was a big bestseller. What he says is he was like a young kid in his 20s, early 20s, growing up in a southern state. I think it was Georgia. And he said that he was a bully and a jerk at that point of his life. And he says he was a jackass. And he was struck by lightning. And he was clinically dead for a half an hour. They took him to the hospital. They found no EKG, not breathing, no heartbeat, no pulse. They tied one of those things on your big toe, you know. It says your next stop is going to be the morgue.
Right.
And he comes back about a half an hour later, and he's been in heaven. He tells the story very lucidly. There is an afterlife. They told me I had to go back. And so he's back. And he is joined by, it's got to be, I won't put a number on it. Many, 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 many people have had this experience like you have, Lisa.
Yes.
The best book on the subject of the last year, bestseller, New York Times bestseller, is by Dr. Eben Alexander.
Yes,
Proof
love
of
that
Heaven.
Book. Yes.
Proof of Heaven. Neurosurgeon, yeah. So the field advances, new research, great research coming out of University of Arizona, Dr. Gary Schwartz.
Right.
I'd like to tell you about him. He's in my film.
He's wonderful. I have his books, and I've read him for many years. I think he's phenomenal too. So let's
can
talk
I tell
about
you,
Dr.
He
Gary
and I
Schwartz.
He and I are writing a he, we have begun to write a book together now about my Fari Ackerman case.
Oh, I want both of you on my show.
Yeah.
It's
co-authored. We're beginning. I'm putting together a timeline of all the events that have happened over 4 years. And it's
awesome.
More than 50 things at this point, you know.
Wow.
More than 50. And I never know when. I can't expect anything's going to happen. I never know when anything's going to happen. It's just I'm living my ordinary life and something really bizarre happens that just is so strange.
Right.
And sometimes there's evidence and other people contest it and see it. Like when Fate magazine published an article about this I wrote, they proofread it. The editor proofread it. The publisher, they have another proofreader. It goes to the press. When it comes back, the first page is all garbled, and it has doubling up these lines that were not there at the beginning of my article. It wasn't even the way I wrote it, talking about the ink blot with two levels of opacity. Oh, that means opaqueness. In other words,
right.
The words were blacked out in two levels of darkness. And it says the word spoke to Joe Imhotie, repeated, where I didn't even write it in the article.
Wow.
And it's an article about Fari with a cover story about one of his favorite artists, Frank R. Paul, science fiction illustrator of the pulp magazines. It's like, how did it happen? And the skeptic wants to say, well, you know, they had a glitch at the printer. You know, these things happen. Don't get excited about it. And I would reply, look, I wouldn't get excited about one incident. But when 50 things are happening to you over 4 years, and some other people too, if you're not willing to make a leap to connect the dots, I think you're being foolish. You know, they don't want you to connect the dots. They don't want you to jump to conclusions.
Right.
Michael Shermer says, look, weird things will happen to people, one-off events. You can't explain them. Doesn't mean there's a paranormal reality. Doesn't mean there's an other side or a veil to pierce. Don't connect them in your own mind. You can't prove they're connected. Put them in a gray basket and leave it there until science is ready to deal with it, right?
Right.
Well, I say the day for science to deal with it is today. Okay.
Amen. Yes. Yes. It's a field that it's almost as if it's the Holy Grail on some level, because we have this at our disposal, and it is this kind of a dimensional field that we're looking at. We're looking over this bridge into this other dimension, and it is this veil. However, we as people, want proof, and that's how our society encourages and validates. And yet, this is a feeling. This is a knowing. This is an emotional awareness. And when you have a knowing that is in your core, in your soul, there isn't a definable fact with it. There's something that is ethereal. It's out there. It's an energy. And so energy, let's get into a little bit of detail here. I was fascinated to learn about the ITC and the EVP, and the EVP being a European study of electronic voice phenomenon. Can we talk a little bit about that? Because that is just a mind blower.
Yes. Well, these studies go back, and I'm not going to remember everybody's name who was involved originally, but I know that there were priests who were making recordings, and voices were showing up when they didn't belong there. And there was somebody who was recording birds, making large numbers of nature tapes, and heard voices that he recognized, and deceased people that he knew. And actually, the priests involved with this took the information to whoever was Pope at that time, who gave his blessing and sanctioned the research and said, this is, further confirmation of what we believe, that there is a soul that goes on. Many people have done efforts with EVP using tape recorders or video cameras. I had an incident of EVP while making the film. One incident. It would take a while to go into all the details, but briefly, the day after the inkblot incident, I had the house checked out with an electromagnetic field reader. And right around the wall from the room where this happened, I had on display an African mask from Zimbabwe that was danced in a ceremony there. And this mask with no metal parts was giving off very intense EMF readings. It was very strange, and it hasn't happened again in the same spot, but it sure did that day. And while we were filming that, this is in the movie too, there was a voice that was discernible on the audio of the video, a voice that said one word, and that was Lenore. Now, this is pretty weird that there's nobody in the house that would have said that, and you're there listening to it, and you hear Lenore.
Right.
Lenore makes me think of Edgar Allan Poe. He wrote a famous poem called Lenore, and Lenore is the lost love in his poem The Raven. And Fari Akerman, coincidentally, or not coincidentally, was a tremendous fan of everything Edgar Allan Poe wrote.
That's so interesting, because in the cover, I looked at the cover picture and I thought, there's Edgar Allan Poe with the raven. And I had no idea.
And the cover picture on our DVD is Fari making a shush gesture like the silence of the night, beware the children of the night. And he has on his Bela Lugosi ring.
Yeah.
The ring that, after it was auctioned in Los Angeles, by the way, over a course of a year, it mysteriously travels 4,000 miles to Halifax, where the film director from Canada who knocked on Fari's crypt that day is living. And it shows up a couple hundred feet from his front door in the window of a display in a gallery there for one day, Fari Akerman's Bela Lugosi ring. Yeah. But getting back to EVP, when Hollywood tackles these subjects, they often are so exploitative. I mean, when they did Signs, they had to add horror into it about the crop circles. And when they did White Noise, which was about EVP, they had to turn it into a horror movie. They're in the business of shocking. So I think that's unfortunate, but there have been many studies, many examples, and some of them are more persuasive than others. Sometimes people will hear noises in the tape and read words into it, or want to play the tape backwards, and think they're finding things, but other people can't really hear it the same way. But other times there are examples, like my Lenore, where really everybody's going to say, oh, I hear that. I hear that. How did that get there? So
and
this leads us back to Gary Schwartz we were going to talk about.
Yes.
His research. Because EVP comes under the category of ITC, instrumental transcommunication. Communication to the other side using our technology, our instrumentation. The computer with Ackerman 000, you know, is one example of that. Gary Schwartz, who was a Harvard graduate, then a Harvard professor, then a Yale professor in psychology, psychiatry, medicine, surgery, et cetera, et cetera. He then became a full professor at University of Arizona, Tucson, where he has a laboratory. He is supported in this research by the university. For a lot of the 15 years or so he's been studying this, he focused on mediums, wanting to differentiate those who think that they're channeling and that they're mediums, but they're not.
Right.
They're, some are pretenders, some are hoaxers, some are, you know, the field is riddled.
Unfortunately.
With problems.
God, is it riddled. Yeah.
Yeah, it's terribly riddled.
It's
however,
horrible.
What Gary, I think, has proven, and he's certainly proven it to me, is that there are some individuals who do have a real and genuine gift.
Yes,
and
I love the one you picked for film. I loved those women.
Yes, we have three in the film. We have Orit Ishyemeni Tomer from Israel.
Oh, she was amazing. And the
amazing.
She was amazing. And Catherine Yunt, she was very good, too. But I really, and I give credit to the ones that I believe, because I see them. They're, you know, it's Flakeville everywhere in my industry. And, you know, it's unfortunate. So when there's good ones, boy, do they need some credence.
And Gary Schwartz has found a lot of the good ones, and he brought me to them without telling them who I was. It was just a gentleman with a camera is going to come. May he film this. There's somebody deceased he'd like to hear from. And with Catherine Yunt, she was given the first name, Forrest. And you'll see in the film what she came up with, what seemed to come through her, was so much of Fari Ackerman and his personality and details about him. It was astonishing. And Orit from Israel was not even given a name. And she sits there and goes into the quiet for a while, and she says, I have a man coming to me who wants to come in, and his name begins either with an F or a P. She says, I can't distinguish because in Hebrew it's the same letter, but in English it's an F or a P. Well, I'm looking to hear from Forrest. So right away she's on the right track.
Right.
And the fact that she can describe that there's money from books, from writing, he has this strange magazine. He has a following of young people, but the parents are not happy about it. They worry, they're afraid when they start, you know, following him. In life, he was an atheist, but he knows it's all much bigger than that now. He had a collection, she said, of all these funny, strange little dolls. You see, she didn't have the word monster at the tip of her tongue because her English is not perfect. So instead of monster props, they're strange little dolls. But she does say, you know, like Yoda. It makes me think of Yoda. And that's exactly what Fari was a collector of. She mentioned there being one woman who was very important in his life who knew everything, his wife. And she said, I think, she said, you know, it's her name, it's an M. I'm seeing an M. Now, this is where, for me at that moment, I thought she had stumbled. Because Fari's wife, everybody knew her as Wendane. But, in fact, Fari gave her the name Wendane. It wasn't her name. And I had to do research to find out what her real name was, and I stumbled across a document of his that acquired at the estate auction months later after this medium reading. Months later, I find that her name was Malka or Mondel. Matilde. Actually, no, the first name was Matilde. It was like Matilda in English. She was of German origin. Matilda, also known as Malka or Mondel. So three versions of her original name all begin with M. And the psychic got that. She's sitting with me. I don't know it at that time. I'm thinking she's wrong. You know, fascinating. Right,
right. Right. And at the same point, she's picking up on the actual name that the woman was birth given at birth.
Yes, yes. She's knowing
That's
more about
phenomenal.
It than I do, so she's not picking it out of my brain, you know,
right.
These things.
Right,
right.
No,
the other thing
the
skeptics want to say. Yeah, they want to say, oh, well, then, see, the skeptics don't believe in telepathy.
Right.
But that's their fallback position to avoid acknowledging life after death. They're saying, well, you
that's
know, the
right.
sitter is there, and they're pulling it out of his mind, you know. So they're getting it.
Right,
your
mind reading. Right.
Yeah.
So there's all that. There's all that piece. You know what it is? It's absolute fear of losing control. And that's why people don't give it the validity and put it in the carnival show, because they want to make, you know, this piece of psychic, of intuitiveness. In fact, I've stayed away from the word psychic because of the connotations that it conjures up. Because
yeah.
It does give you an image of a carnival worker with a black velvet Elvis picture next to a black velvet Jesus picture in the room.
Yeah.
So, you know, with the crystal ball. So there's the flake factor, and then there's actual people who have the intuitive awareness that they can tap into an energy and they can get information from it. And, you know, the Long Island psychic for me is the worst, you know, aspect of entertainment for America, because you have people who are believing this staged aspect, and there's actual validity out there that's not being addressed
that
and looked
sense.
At.
Well, Gary Schwartz, Dr. Gary Schwartz, who has worked with the mediums for so long, felt that the next advancement in his research was instrumental transcommunication, of using computers. He designed computer software working in conjunction with extremely sensitive measuring devices that would detect very, very subtle fluctuations in radiation and energy. And he has to filter out the noise level, because you'll get certain random fluctuations. So he's looking for fluctuations that would exceed that, and exceed it by quite a bit, you know, orders of magnitude. And the belief is, the theory, let's say, is that just like there are radio waves and TV waves and internet waves, you know, all around us, everywhere in the atmosphere, everywhere in the world now, and passing through our very bodies. And we wouldn't know this unless we had the television and the radio and, you know, the iPhone to unscramble and detect the signals. You don't even know there are signals. This is the problem that mankind has regarding the other side, if you will, that we can't detect the signals. We know our senses are limited. A dog can hear better than us and can sniff, you know, better than us. Many animals have vision to see light at ends of the scale that we can't see. So we're confined by our senses. Let's admit it. But the point is that can our instrumentation, such as computers, software, these sensitive measuring devices, can they pick up the signals from deceased people, from spirits all around us, and actually engage in communication? And can this communication get to be more than just yes-no responses? Can it get to the point where information is exchanged? So far, I think Gary's experiments have been remarkably successful. And if you get the Life After Death Project and see it in the climax of the first film,
yes.
Is in Gary's laboratory, where he is communicating with spirits that he's been in touch with, that he's experimented with that for many, many months already, and he asks their permission to bring Forrest J. Ackerman in as one of the correspondents. And what you see on the scale at the moment he asked for that permission is such a resounding yes. I mean, the bar graph you're looking at suddenly has this burst of, I think it's gamma ray radiation that he's measuring at that point. And it isn't just one isolated incident that you could say was a fluke. It happens again and again and again when questions are asked, and he'll get an answer. Or if 45 seconds goes by and there's nothing that happens, then he takes the answer to be a no. And then you see him ask Fari, what identifier do you want? What level of radiation that we see here, and what kind of a pulse is going to represent you, Fari, so we know it's you talking to us? And Fari chooses a burst of a 3-level. So he gets a 3-level on the bar graph as the response to his question, and then when he continues the conversations with Fari, when the answer is yes, you get another burst at the 3-level. You know, come on, this is not coincidence. There's real data, scientific data. It's a real effect. The man's been published in the peer-reviewed journal on this research. He's been funded now to expand it. This, I think, is the future of, it's one of the key futures for life after death research.
I think that's so promising, because in our own discovery, as we start to develop so much technology, I don't want to see the loss of the emotional piece that connects us with Source. And we have this. We have this in our emotions, and we have this in our soul. And that's what's really projected out when we are tapping into that energy of the beyond. We're actually tapping into the emotional piece of it. And so it's that connection we have to really stay in tune with. And I'd love to see you tackle an idea of, here's a thought for a documentary in regard to dealing with aliens and looking at them as angels, because I think throughout time we have termed angels erroneously in many aspects. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's alien contact that we put, you know, the word alien just conjures up just such a funky visual for me. So It's, you know, to really take that concept and really roll with it, I think would be a fascinating subject. And, you know, you have this this part within the story in regard to Ackerman, where his influence for you, and also Stephen King, and also Spielberg and George Lucas, he was actually such a pioneer and an inspirer for so many that these beliefs, you see them in Stephen King's work, you see them in Spielberg's work, you see that taking it to the next level, even though Ackerman was an atheist, he had this depth about him that lives on.
Yes, and he was a futurist, and through science fiction he was always looking for those concepts that best demonstrated where mankind and civilization could go in the future in a very positive way, you know, for advancement. And I think one of the reasons that he was a skeptic and an atheist was, you know, as we've said, you know, the field has been riddled with charlatans. Even going back to Sir Arthur Conan Doyle,
yes,
who wrote Sherlock Holmes, and he was wrapped up in the world of spiritualism and seances, and was a believer in these contacts. And he says, and you'll see the clip of him in Life After Death Project.
Yeah, he was great.
He says, you know, it's not that something I believe, it's something I know. I'm talking about things that I've seen with my own eyes, that I've heard, that there have been witnesses. And that's all fine and good, and I believe him. Now I believe him. 5 years ago, I wouldn't have paid attention to it, but yes. However, he stumbled when he came up against a fraud that had to do with some fairy photos. At a time when trick photography wasn't developed yet, but there were, I think it was two sisters who produced these photos that they said were fairies in their garden. And he became convinced that they were real. Harry Houdini said, "You're falling for a fraud." And in this case, Harry Houdini was right. He was the debunker, and it left Arthur Conan Doyle's reputation soiled. So there is always the danger of falling into the trap of someone who's deceiving you.
Yeah.
And the best thing I can say to your audience now, since I'm coming forward with something that I think is definitive, Gary Schwartz describes it as historic, that the Life After Death Project is pulling all this information in together in a way that hasn't been done before. That the best I can say to your audience is, it's real, it's honest. I swear to the fact that there's no hoax involved. And I've
right.
said this, as God is my witness, I'm giving you something that's true. My purpose is advancement of science. And I went to the scientists when I had the data. I went to the forensic chemists at Indiana University and College of New Jersey. I gave them their chance. They spent years on it. They can't duplicate it. It's still a mystery to them. And they've been haunted. One in particular has had haunting experiences while researching the case that once again seemed to have Fari Ackerman's playful signature about it. Let me just say, the Acker Mansion is reported to be haunted by those that live there now. It was sold, he left, remodeled, people moved in. I visited them. You'll see in the film, they report the haunting there. And one of the things is a singer there who rehearses with music papers on a stand that tips back. I mean, the paper shouldn't just fall off. But when she's outside the room rehearsing late at night and she makes a phone call, she, you know, gets something to drink, and she comes back and finds the papers scattered on the floor like someone tossed them. And she says jokingly to me, no, serious, I think she's serious. She says, you know, I guess he doesn't like my singing. He's trying to tell me, to find something else to do with my life. But the parallel there is that the scientist in New Jersey, Dr. John Allison, when I visited him to work in his laboratory and went to his house that morning, he had a stack of papers of trying to duplicate ink blots with different solvents, unsuccessful, but he had a whole stack of them and he wanted to show me. And he tucked them under his chair. He hadn't picked me up at the airport yet, by the way. I hadn't come in that morning. But tucked them on a chair beneath his briefcase in the dining room. And it's a room, like at the Acker Mansion, there's no wind to blow papers around. You know, there's no pets.
Right.
There's nothing that would cause it that you could say. And he's out of the room for a few minutes, like I was out of the room when the ink blot happened. He comes back, and those papers with his experimental ink blots are scattered all across the floor, like somebody picked them up and threw them, tossed them. You see, now, when that happens to him, and it's the same thing that's happening to someone who's in the Acker Mansion, and we're seeing all of these things that tie this to Fari, how do you think I react when I hear the skeptics say, oh, you're jumping to conclusions? You have no idea there's any connection between the pages in New Jersey and the pages in California. Two separate incidents. Keep them separate, you know?
Right.
I just say, look, you know, how much is 2 + 2? You know?
Yes.
Can you add?
Yes. Yes. And you know, the piece for people is it's that fear of what they can't explain. It's the fear of the unknown. It's the fear of losing control. And that they're going to be on some level manipulated with something that they can't control or see. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, these hauntings, these ghost stories, these horrific episodes are very rare. When spirits come in, they're usually coming in to show love or give a little support or give a little message if you're asking them something. But there's not a whole lot of, you know, crazy spook unless you're in a place that's actually had a horrific episode or there's
then
been...
Then you get what we call poltergeist activity.
Yes, exactly, poltergeists. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but this is something that there's more and more people seeing it. There's more and more people being opening up to it and communicating about it, just like they are with UFOs. So it's like there's this energy that I believe is increasing on our planet and the awareness is increasing, I'm just really excited that it's finally coming out of the closet.
That's my goal, you know, Lisa, as it's been my goal on many of my films. You know,
well,
I was executive producer
buddy,
Roswell.
I tell you.
Roswell
that's
was my UFOs, and I did Jesus in India.
And
the Sci-Fi Boys, which you can see on Netflix, which is about the whole history of special effects, and the early guys like Ackerman, who's in it, and Ray Bradbury, Ray Harryhausen. You know why they were considered kooks back in the 1930s? They were ostracized. They were at the fringes. And the reason was that they had this crazy idea that man could get to the moon and that it would even happen within their lifetimes. And for that, you know, they're considered nutcases back in the 1930s.
Right.
And I do think when you're talking about the attitudes of the skeptics who are, you keep mentioning fear as being one of their motivations, I think there's something else going. I often see a personality quality that is like a superiority complex. It's like an enjoyment in putting somebody else down.
You
and
are right.
Making somebody else the weirdo or the oddball in the group.
Yes. That is because the amazing Randy or the psychic, he's got such an arrogance about him that there's such an arrogance that there's
arrogance
such a superiority.
Goes along with the territory. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, you're right. Those who
and you
do
see the same thing in UFO debunkers, and it's a little bit like, you know, in the schoolyard, you know, the kids are always going to gang up on the skinny one, you know, the one who's a little bit different. Well, those of us who explore these esoteric beliefs, we're the ones who are, you know, different, and they're all the time trying to put us in the box.
Right.
That we're fringe, that we're, you know, loonies, that we're, they have this expression called woo-woo. Right,
then
the very word believer has become a pejorative negative. You know, it says, you know, well, he's a believer. You know, are you a believer?
Yeah.
You know, oh, okay, you're a believer. We got you figured out, right?
Yeah, right,
you know?
Right. It's a label now. You know,
yeah. And they're so caught up in the closing the door and denial and refusing to consider that in the process, their own behavior is blocking out any possibility of picking up these subtle signs and these things that happen. You know, there's a lot of people, I think, that would have seen the ink blot happen and would have just said, how did this ink get here? You know, ruined my document. I'm going to have to print it out again. How did that happen? Damn it. Now I got to go downstairs and print it again. And then that's the end of it. They forget it.
That's
There's
right.
no
that's
inquiry.
Right.
How did it happen? Why did it happen? Who did it? You know?
Oh,
it's just,
I know.
What a pain in the neck. This is an annoyance to me. Now I've got to go back and do it again. And I see that all the time. I see that, you know.
The mindset.
Yeah.
You know,
it's the
type of person who either is open-minded or the type of person who is closed-minded. And there's just that delineating factor. You know, when my mom died, I had my 3-year-old son run out of the house as I'm taking groceries into the house, and he's saying, "Mommy, Mommy, there's aliens in the house." And I said, "Oh, honey, there's no aliens. I'll go in." Well, I was grieving horribly, and it was a week after she died, and I went into the house, and these walkie-talkies that never, ever worked for 3 years, they were in my son's toy box, never worked for three years, are buzzing wildly through the house with these, like, white noise voices coming through them. And my body turns into goosebumps. I know she's there. I talk to her. I calm, you know, the child down, my son. And we go about our day. 3 hours later, this Hummel music box that has never run but was his.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
And she was very close to him, starts playing this beautiful ballad. And I'm getting goosebumps telling you the story. So I know that these things exist. I know
you've had the personal confirmation. You've had it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, many times.
Unambiguous.
And from many people. Yes. And so these things are constantly coming through me. And I've had, you know, numerous dreams where I've had conversations with people who have passed. And, you know, I work with people and sometimes their loved ones will come through, but it's not something I ask to come through. When I work with an individual, I don't ask for their deceased loved ones. If they decide to come in, I'll say something and I'll connect with their energy and I'll pick up personality traits and I'll express it. But so these things are happening all the time, and I'm seeing them happening more and more. I think we've sped up the energy.
They don't happen to everyone, though. You know, this is the fact.
No, they don't.
They do happen to a lot, because as I questioned so many people, and my wife questioned so many people while I'm working on the Life After Death project, you know, I maybe it's a third of the people, maybe even half, who have a story to tell you.
Right.
Something's happened to them. But it stays in the closet, you know, because it's really not socially acceptable for polite company to come out with these things, you know.
Right.
Again, you get labeled. You're the kook.
That's
the
nut.
You're the, you believe in aliens, right?
What? That's right.
Oh, you think they're spooks. You think they're ghosts. I mean, they you know, that's their game.
And it's interesting to me, because I was raised by, my mother was Roman Catholic, my father believed in UFOs and never went to church. So I'm a combination of this, okay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the my father would never talk to anybody about his belief in UFOs, but it traveled down through the lineage, because now my son has had phenomenal experiences. And my other son has had phenomenal experiences. And my daughter's spoken to spirits. And so I have four children, and all four of them have had experiences. And it's been things that have happened when they were younger than 6 years old. So it wasn't like they were manipulating truth or they were telling a story. I mean, these things were so organic and natural. It was I walked in on it while they were conversing. So
Have you written all of this up? Have you
I'm actually in the process of writing several books about it, and that's my goal, is to
I'd love to see your account, because it's what I'm working on now, is an account where you try to have a record of each one of these things that has happened, and then for what the interrelationships are.
I would be honored to give you everything I have. I would love it. I'll send it to you. We're going to talk, because I want to have you on a lot more when you're free, because you've done so many phenomenal documentaries, and that's my heart, that, you know, the afterlife, neuroscience, those are two big ones, aliens, UFOs, all of that. It's just, I'm
and Lisa,
so
I don't know how we are for time. I don't have a watch on. Where are we?
We have 3 minutes, so I want to guide everybody to your site, and I want them to get your CD, and it's www.lifeafterdeathproject.com.
Right, DVD. It's a two DVD set. And if you can get it at our site, we ship it all around the world. And at Amazon.com, it just really shot up in the numbers. I mean, it's opening day, it turns out to be at the peak moment, documentary number 41 of every one that they sell, of thousands of them from the last 60 years of all television and movies. So I'd like to see that go up. So I invite people, you know, help us out. You'd like to support the research, go to Amazon. You'll get it
definitely
right away, and I know you'll enjoy it. It's over 4 hours with the two movies, 40 minutes of bonus materials. Ray Bradbury's on that, Rick Baker. I think that my 4 years of work are now a gift that I think is going to help this whole field along and help the conversation. It's confirmation for those who have already had confirmation in their life, and it's a huge challenge to those with closed minds. Some of them won't even look at it. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I'm having my family watch it with me again tonight. So I'm absolutely loving that you put this out. This is so well done, so well documented, so true. So it's something that I believe needs to be educated within our school systems, because it gets the mind thinking on a much more broader spectrum. And
yes.
Paul Davids, God bless you. Thank you so much for being my guest on Unlimited Realities today. You have been just a joy. Absolutely my favorite interview by far this date. So thank you for that.
Oh,
and
that's wonderful to hear. Please be in touch by email, and I'd love to hear more about how you're putting together the writing of those incidents. Love to
thank
hear
you, Paul. I certainly will, and I look forward to your new book as well with Dr. Gary Schwartz. So that will be an excitement as well, and we will connect. So
thank
God
you.
Bless everyone. Thank you again, Paul Davids. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this wonderful show with Paul Davids' Life After Death Project. God bless you, and have a wonderful week. Thanks again, Paul.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.